Hello and welcome to KMUD's Public Affairs. Today is June 4th.
We are the South Fork High School radio class reporting for KMUD.
I'm Angelina Apodaca.
My name is Riley Nardell reporting for KMUD.
I'm Olivia Wilson reporting for KMUD.
Malia Staffslin reporting for KMUD.
Chevy Bureau Van Meter reporting for KMUD.
Alethea Berger reporting for KMUD.
Trey Wilner reporting for KMUD.
In today's public affairs, we bring you important stories from across the country.
Ocean Expedition seeks to map California biodiversity. Marine research on a recent expedition off of Santa Cruz Island in Southern California mapped the habitat of red gorgonian coral, sea stars, and sheepshed fish, Suzanne Potter reports.
Push to mobilize young voters in rural Ohio. 63% of rural youth, 30 million people, are infrequent or uncommitted voters, according to Rural Democracy Initiative. Nadia Romlagan reports.
Ahead of November's general election, advocates in Ohio are working to boost youth voter participation. Gen Z voters are focused on climate change and universal health care, but their turnout continues to lag, especially in rural regions. Jen Miller with the League of Women Voters of Ohio says young people need easy access to education and resources to make informed decisions. She says engaging young voters at the local and state level on issues such as criminal justice, public transit, and community parks is crucial for improving their lives.
Recent demographics have shown that about 20% of 18 to 24-year-old voters say they're uninterested. I think it's really important that we help them understand how voting impacts their daily lives.
Nationwide, an estimated 60% of rural youth live in so-called civic deserts, regions lacking public gathering places to meet and discuss local issues or work to solve problems. 63% of rural youth, or 30 million people, are infrequent or uncommitted voters, according to Rural Democracy Initiative. Miller adds young people face several barriers to voting, such as not registering by the deadline, not having a proper form of identification, or lack of transportation.
We work really hard on helping young voters make their voting plan. First, making sure that their registration is up to date. Second, that they know how they want to vote. We help them find their polling location.
The Rural Youth Voter Fund, led by Rural Democracy Initiative, is investing $10 million over the next year in grants to help young voters in small towns across the nation organize and expand civic engagement. This is Nadia Romlagan for Ohio News Connection.
Cool and colorful pavement helps California beat the heat. Suzanne Potter reports.
Cities can fight the summer heat by painting a reflective coating on the pavement, according to a new study in the journal Environmental Research Communications. Researchers from the firm Altostratus tested the use of cool pavement coating on the streets of Southern California and found it can lower the surface temperature by about 10 degrees and drop the ambient air temperature just over 2 degrees. Haider Taha is an atmospheric modeler and president of Altostratus.
These cool pavements reduce air temperature, and that has impacts on thermal comfort, on energy use, on even emissions and air quality. So it has lots of benefits. So I think it is worth that cities consider cool pavements in their plan, at least for maintenance.
The coating reflects infrared light, meaning the painted pavement ends up absorbing less heat and thus radiates less heat for most of the day. Researchers coated 700,000 square feet of pavement in the city of Pacoima in the summer of 2022. The coating doesn't change the look of the street, and spectral analysis shows there's no increase in glare for drivers. Kelly Turner at UCLA's Luskin Center for Innovation points out that reflective coatings can't beat shade, which can cool people by up to 54 degrees Fahrenheit in hot, dry environments.
Shade is effective because it prevents the sunlight from hitting the body, and it also prevents surfaces from warming up. So it provides sort of double duty. It's a preventative measure.
The company that makes the coating, GAF, funded the peer-reviewed research, although the company had no role in the study's design, data collection, modeling, or analysis of the results. This story was produced with original reporting from Isabel Kemp for SmartCitiesDive.com. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
After the storms, Texans help Texans. Statewide, Texas residents have experienced everything from damaging winds to hail to flooding and deadly tornadoes during the spring storm season. According to the National Weather Service, an EF2 tornado with wind speeds of 135 miles per hour killed 7 people and injured more than 100 others in Cookie County. It's just one of a series of dangerous weather events across the state in the last several weeks. Texans on Mission, a faith-based nonprofit formerly known as Texas Baptist Men, assist victims worldwide after a disaster.
The organization's John Hall says crews are spread out across the Lone Star State.
Right now, we are serving in multiple locations in Houston after the high wind storms down there. We're serving in 2 locations in San Marcos after tornadoes down there. We're serving after the flooding in southeast Texas. We're serving here after the tornado up in far north Texas.
Hull says because of the number of recent severe weather events in Texas, they are short on volunteers. So the organization is receiving assistance from partner groups in Arkansas, Louisiana, New Mexico, and North Carolina. At least 200 homes and businesses in North Texas were destroyed by the tornadoes. Governor Greg Abbott has extended an existing disaster declaration to include Denton, Montague, Cook, and Collin counties. The declaration makes the regions eligible for additional funding under FEMA's Public Assistance Program. Hull says when volunteers arrive at a disaster scene, residents need basic necessities.
We'll bring in mobile shower laundry teams to give people access to shower and laundry services. We'll bring in mass feeding teams. And then often we bring in chainsaw teams that will take out the large trees that have fallen on people's cars and their houses.
He says the volunteers remain in the impacted areas for several weeks after a catastrophic event. Hull says over the past year they have responded to disasters on 6 different continents. For Texas News Service, I'm Deborah Van Fleet.
The southern resident sea otter was listed under the Endangered Species Act in 1977. The population went from just 50 animals in the 1930s to more than 3,000 today. Suzanne Potter reports.
California is home to more than 300 threatened and endangered species, with more federally protected animals than any other state. Susan Holmes is executive director of the Endangered Species Coalition.
There is a lot of work to do, but there are some extraordinary people doing it, and we just want to get folks to get out in nature and recommit to protecting endangered species in your communities and also around the country.
Check the website, endangered.org, for the events closest to you. Programs include a butterfly festival in San Francisco and a celebration at the Audubon Nature Center in L.A. Efforts to protect endangered species are often highly successful. For example, California had no endangered gray wolves in the wild as of 2010 and now has 6 wolf packs with at least 45 animals. Holmes says a partnership with the Yurok tribe has led to a rebound in the California condor population.
The California condor was just 22 birds brought into a captive breeding program. Now you've got 300 that are flying in the wild when they were completely gone from the wild not so long ago.
Some of the biggest threats to endangered species include impacts on food sources due to climate change and loss of habitat due to development. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
New York Group offers resources for student protesters, bystanders. A report from the nonprofit Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project showed student demonstrations make up around 1/3 of all U.S. protests related to the Israel-Hamas war since it began. Edward J. Vierna reports,
New York groups are providing pro-Gaza student protesters with resources. In the weeks since they began, student protesters have faced arrests, rubber bullets, and other crowd-breaking tactics by law enforcement. Students want universities and colleges to divest from Israel amid the country's ongoing war with Hamas. Others have shown support for Israel. Kalia Ann Mendoza with Nonviolent Peace Force says there are many ways to remain safe when protesting.
If you're going to any protest, action, or demonstration, always make sure you have a buddy and always make sure that someone else knows where you are at and when you plan to be home safe. Number 2, practice situational awareness. Situational awareness is essentially understanding what's happening around you.
Mendoza says protesters should also pay attention to exit points, be aware of threats, be prepared with water, a snack, and necessary meds, and carry a mask in case of tear gas. For bystanders and others, he says basic situational awareness can help them navigate protests and encampments. But students aren't the only ones causing the ruckus. The New York City Police Department finds more than half of the 170 people arrested at a city college protest weren't students. 29% of the 112 arrested at Columbia weren't either. Mendoza says administrators should do the opposite of what they have been doing.
School administrators should be meeting with students and should not escalate to this point. These students are unarmed. They are engaged in practicing peaceful, nonviolent protest, which is a fundamental human right.
He notes the primary source of violence has been police escalation at encampments. An ACLED report shows a majority of student protests occurring since last October, when the war in Gaza began, have been peaceful. New York has seen the most pro-Israel and pro-Palestine demonstrations, with California running a close second. This is Edwin J. Vieira for New York News Connection. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
Report sheds light on service gap for boys who are sexually exploited. The research community reported sexually exploited boys commonly experience adverse mental health effects, including depression, PTSD, and substance use disorder. Mike Moen reports.
Experts in the fight against the sexual exploitation of minors say there's still a gap in highlighting how young men are targeted. And new research says a large number of Minnesota survivors aren't getting the help they need to heal from their trauma. A report from the group Protect All Children from Trafficking says only 15% of sexually exploited boys received any form of specialized services, compared to 65% of girls. PAC CEO Lori Cohen says rates of human trafficking cases are higher for girls, but adds boys still need an adequate level of follow-up support. She says it starts with how key figures in the community are trained to spot these cases.
The tendency still is to look for that and identify it among girls and not among boys.
The report says, along with systemic barriers, there are still masculine stereotypes that foster shame for a male to disclose they've been sexually exploited. Cohen points out that Minnesota is a leader in the child protection space, but the authors say uneven implementation of the state's safe harbor law criminalizes boys who are victimized rather than supporting them. In the school setting, Cohen says classroom disruptions can be a warning sign, but she feels boys are often treated differently when behavioral issues arise.
A boy might be seen as acting up in school, and instead of having access to services that a girl who was acting up in school might get, a social worker, a guidance counselor, boys tend to be punished.
She says if that leads to an expulsion, the boy might encounter housing instability, putting them at greater risk of being exploited. Researchers say safe, stable housing is an essential prevention tool, but it has to include wraparound services like mental health care and job training. Even though the report looked at Minnesota data, Cohen feels the results resonate globally. This is Mike Moen for Minnesota News Connection.
People in Texas prisons claim heat-related effects demand air conditioning. Multiple lawsuits have been filed against the Texas Department of Criminal Justice because its prisons are not air-conditioned. Frieda Ross reports.
The Texas Department of Criminal Justice is facing a class action lawsuit calling for the agency to add central air conditioning to all its prisons. Only 30% of the prisons in Texas have central air, and advocates say the sweltering summer heat is inhumane and impacts the physical and emotional health of people who are incarcerated. Four organizations, including Lioness Justice Impacted Women's Alliance, are plaintiffs in the lawsuit. The group's Marcy Marie Simmons says during her 10 years at the Dr. Lane Murray unit in Gatesville, she was concerned about her health and the health of other women.
I remember worrying about the insides of my body, like, what is this heat doing to my organs? I watched older women have a really hard time in the summer. I watched women fall out with heat-induced seizures.
The Texas House of Representatives has passed a bill that would require all Texas prisons have air conditioning by 2029, but the prison system only has to comply if the state provides the funding. Over the last 10 years, 13 heat-related deaths have been documented in men's prisons in Texas. According to TDCJ policy, when the heat index is above 90 degrees, additional water, ice, and cups are provided to people in prison. They can also wear shorts and t-shirts. In certain cases, they can receive permission to go into one of the designated air-conditioned spaces. Simmons says about 90,000 people behind bars across the state don't have access to cool air.
The lawsuit is asking for the same regulations that are on jails, which is to keep the temperatures between 65 degrees and 85 degrees. Currently, about 30% of beds have climate control.
The Lone Star State is one of at least 13 in the country where all facilities are not air conditioned. Texas experienced the second hottest summer on record last year, and climate experts predict this year will be just as bad or worse. I'm Frida Ross, Texas News Service.
Horses could hold key to treating injury-related arthritis. Horses, like people, typically only show signs of osteoarthritis at advanced stages when they experience joint pain. Eric Galatis reports.
Researchers at Colorado State University are making headway in identifying how osteoarthritis progresses in horses, and their findings could one day also help people who develop the degenerative disease after injuring a knee, elbow, or shoulder. Lead researcher and assistant professor Lynn Pezzanite says the disease affects nearly 8 in 10 horses over the age of 15.
It's the most common disorder affecting joints in horses as well as in people, and one of the most common disorders that we treat overall in horses. It's one of the most common reasons horses present to a veterinarian.
Pezzanite and her team are hoping to find markers of how osteoarthritis develops in horses by studying individual immune cells in joint fluid. Those markers may provide insights on how veterinarians can use gene therapies or other treatments at specific stages to slow the disease's progression. Typically, people and animals only show signs of osteoarthritis at advanced stages when they're experiencing joint pain. Pezzanite believes information in immune cells might expose the disease much earlier, even before evidence appears on x-rays.
Our goal with this work is to look at those very early stages in horses that have post-traumatic arthritis so that we can determine that tipping point of when we should be intervening or not. And hopefully this will inform treatment in humans as well.
Pezzanite says people could benefit from this research if the immune markers can be translated across species. Physicians would have better information about when to intervene before full-blown osteoarthritis develops.
If you're playing soccer and twist your knee, tear your ACL, we would potentially be able to take a sample of that joint fluid and know whether you're going to develop arthritis or not, which would allow us to be more aggressive in treatment of that joint.
This is Eric Galatis for the Colorado News Connection.
The Mojave Desert tortoise is now listed as endangered in California, but is still listed as threatened under the Federal Endangered Species Act. Suzanne Potter reports.
Groups that fight to recover endangered species are praising the California Fish and Game Commission's decision to change the Mojave Desert tortoise from threatened to endangered under state law. One study estimates the normally long-lived species has declined quickly in recent years, losing around 155,000 adult animals from 2004 to 2014. Jeff Ardall with Defenders of Wildlife says California's state reptile is on a fast track to extinction.
There are so few left that tortoises are going to start experiencing very difficult situations in trying to find mates. And so because of that, the trend is going to keep going down until ultimately there's no longer any tortoises left.
The biggest threats are development, military base expansion and training, livestock grazing, and off-highway vehicle use. Wildlife managers have recorded dozens of animals crushed by OHVs in recent years, especially in critical habitat from Ridgecrest down to Barstow, north up to Fort Irwin, and east to the state line. California draws 2 million off-road vehicle enthusiasts each year. Ardall says a coalition of groups, including Defenders of Wildlife, sued in 2021 to force the Bureau of Land Management to redo its management plan and better protect the Mojave Desert tortoise.
There should be some closures during the spring when most tortoises are above ground foraging and mating, and then greatly reducing the miles of routes that intersect with critical habitat.
Land managers fenced off one especially sensitive area around 1980. Since then, the Mojave Desert tortoise population there rose to be 6 times higher than neighboring areas that are used for off-roading. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter.
Restaurant chains called into question for meat production sources. Animal welfare groups say food companies that rely on inhumane practices in their supply chain expose themselves to financial risks, with investors and shareholders showing increasing concern about these issues. Mike Moen reports.
Today is National Animal Rights Day, and some of the more popular restaurant chains in North Dakota have come under fire for how the meats they use are produced, including the local environmental impacts. Fast food chains like Subway and Taco Bell are listed in a new report from the group Animal Equality, which says these restaurants are lagging behind others in ending the use of gestational crates for pregnant pigs. The authors say these animals are raised in extremely close confinement, with bars pressed against their skin. Animal Equality's Dr. Devin Deere says it also ties into broader health issues linked with factory farms.
When you have this many animals in one place, you're getting really high concentrations of feces. You're having all of the environmental impacts of this. I mean, pigs produce a ton of waste, and this has to be disposed of properly to not make nearby communities sick.
The report says certain chains, such as McDonald's and Wendy's, have made progress toward healthier supply chain practices. However, more than a dozen others highlighted in the findings have not. 11 states have banned the use of gestational crates, but North Dakota isn't among them. Some of the restaurant chains could not be reached for comment. As for other environmental impacts, Deere says the stress placed on these animals creates a ripple effect that goes beyond their well-being.
And more stress means more antibiotics. More antibiotics means, you know, higher chances of antibiotic-resistant germs coming into the environment.
The organization also cites public opinion data from World Animal Protection. In its survey, 80% of U.S. consumers said they were concerned about the treatment of factory-farmed pigs. This is Mike Moen for Prairie News Service.
We now go to 2024 Talks, tracking our democracy in historic times.
Welcome to 2024 Talks, where we're following our democracy in historic times.
I think this is a powerful disincentive for young people to want to go into public health and maybe even science and medicine in the public arena.
Former national COVID-19 lead Dr. Anthony Fauci tells House lawmakers he and his colleagues are still getting death threats over the pandemic response. Republicans called Fauci to testify about theories that a Chinese lab, which got U.S. funding, intentionally created the virus. They accused Fauci of lying about that. Intelligence and medical researchers disagree on whether the virus leaked from a lab, but they say there is no evidence it was man-made. President Joe Biden's name will appear on Ohio's November ballot. The governor just signed a measure to delay the state's candidate certification deadline until after Biden is formally nominated. He also signed a companion bill banning foreign nationals from funding Ohio ballot measures. Republican Representative Bill Seitz says that includes green card holders.
Foreign money is a fundamental infection of our political process. It is difficult to trace. It requires consideration of international issues.
Democrats say the Republicans are just smarting over the landslide win of a measure that put a right to abortion in the state constitution, which got a tiny amount of money from a Swiss billionaire. A Washington Post investigation says the vast majority of school voucher programs favor religious schools. The programs have rapidly expanded in half of states, letting parents get tax credits to offset private school tuition. Arkansas Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders calls it a revolution.
Where the education establishment has failed, conservatives are picking up the pieces. From school boards to state legislatures to Congress, education freedom is winning across this country.
Critics argue the programs drain public education funding and erode the separation of church and state. Several universities could withhold diplomas for students arrested in pro-Palestinian protests. University of Chicago graduate Yusuf Haswa calls it a pointless and punitive attack on free speech.
At the University of Chicago, the free speech university, talking about Palestine is not free.
A new Louisiana law makes it a crime to come within 25 feet of a police officer under certain circumstances. Civil rights advocates say it will hinder the public's ability to video misconduct. State Representative Edmund Jordan calls it a setback for racial justice.
In my opinion, this is probably one of the worst, if not the worst, bill of this session.
Violators face fines and up to 60 days in jail. Florida enacted a similar law earlier this year. And finally, President Biden is expected to sign an executive order significantly limiting asylum granted at the U.S.-Mexico border. Requests will reportedly be capped at 2,500 a day, starting immediately. I'm Catherine Carley for Pacifica Network and Public News Service. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
The Public News Service Daily Newscast for June the 4th, 2024. I'm Mike Clifford. An Indiana watchdog group says it is considering legal action in response to new state laws the group believes disenfranchise voters.
Common Cause, Indiana Executive Director Julia Vaughn says there are significant concerns about the impact of new legislation. One such law started as House Bill 1334, which passed at the State House last year. Vaughn argues the restrictions it outlines for people who want to vote by absentee ballot create considerable barriers, especially for already marginalized communities.
We're gathering evidence. This was the new law that requires people who are registering to vote by mail to include their voter ID number. The problem is your voter ID number could be one of three different numbers.
According to the Civic Health Index, Indiana ranked 50th for voter turnout in 2022. Common Cause Indiana is advocating for expanded early voting options and the implementation of automatic voter registration. I'm Joe Ullery, Public News Service.
And sticking with the election beat, New Mexico voters are headed to the polls today, where all 42 state Senate and 70 state House seats technically are up for grabs, although many are uncontested.
At last count, there were about 1,337,000 registered voters, 43% Democrats and 31% registered as Republicans. AARP State Director Joseph Roybal Sanchez reminds voters that it's too late to mail in an absentee ballot, but people can still cast a ballot in person today, providing they register with a political party.
Same-day registration is offered at every polling place on election day, and each county offers at least two ballot drop-off boxes, and tribes have access to the same resources for voting as other parts of New Mexico.
The Bernalillo County Clerk said last week that early voter turnout has been low, even lower than the last presidential primary in the middle of a pandemic. I'm Roz Brown.
New Mexico has a closed primary system, which means Democrats may not vote in the Republican primary or vice versa, and independent or unaffiliated voters cannot participate in either primary. Meantime, Dr. Anthony Fauci, the former director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases, testified at a House subcommittee hearing about the U.S.'s COVID-19 pandemic response and the origins of the virus. That from CNN. They report the hearing was Fauci's first public hearing on Capitol Hill since his retirement from government service. CNN notes at the hearing, Fauci also detailed some of the threats he and his family received in the wake of the pandemic. This is Public News Service. Workers in the oil and gas industry are cautiously monitoring the supply and demand of liquefied natural gas, otherwise known as LNG.
Texas is one of the largest producers of LNG in the country, and a recent report from the nonprofit Institute for Energy Economics and Financial Analysis shows while there is a surplus of the fuel, demand for the product is declining. The Institute's Sam Reynolds co-authored the report and says current and future operations in the Lone Star State could be adversely impacted.
There are currently 5 LNG projects under construction, primarily in Texas and Louisiana. You've got the Golden Pass LNG facility, the Rio Grande LNG facility, Port Arthur in Texas, as well as the Corpus Christi LNG facility.
The Texas oil and natural gas industry pumps more than $26 million in state and local taxes into the state's economy annually. I'm Frieda Ross reporting.
And as water scarcity affects states across the West, the Utah community is getting funds from the bipartisan infrastructure law to help support its water reuse and drought resilience projects.
The Washington County Water Conservancy District in St. George received over $20 million in funding for its $1 billion regional reuse water system. District General Manager Zach Renstrom says it'll include new and expanded water treatment facilities, new reservoirs, and many miles of pipeline and multiple pump stations.
A lot of the initial funds will just go to the design portion of it, designing these large facilities, but we can also start using some of that funding for construction. And so there's a match too. They match up to 25%. We're proceeding forward now, so it's exciting to have all these funds.
I'm Alex Gonzalez reporting.
Finally, Suzanne Potter lets us know cities can fight the summer heat by painting a reflective coating on the pavement. That's according to a new study in the journal Environmental Research Communications. More in the Smart Cities Drive, Solutions Journalism, California News Service Collaboration.
Researchers from the firm Altostratus tested the use of cool pavement coating on the streets of Southern California and found it can lower the surface temperature by about 10 degrees and drop the ambient air temperature just over 2 degrees. Haider Taha is an atmospheric modeler and president of Altostratus.
These cool pavements reduce air temperature, and that has impacts on thermal comfort, on energy use, on even emissions and air quality. So it has lots of benefits.
The coating reflects infrared light.
This is Mike Clifford for Public News Service, member and listener supported. Hear us on interesting radio stations, your favorite podcast platform. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
I've been Angelina Apodaca.
It's Riley Nardell reporting for KMUD.
I'm Olivia Wilson reporting for KMUD.
Malia Staffslin reporting for KMUD.
Chevy Bureau Van Meter reporting for KMUD.
Alethea Berger reporting for KMUD.
Trey Wilner reporting for KMUD.
We are the South Fork High School Radio Class reporting for KMUD.
Thank you for listening to KMUD's Public Affairs.